Marhava Punjabi Hare. Jaya Radha Marhava Punjabi Hare. Gopi Jana Balaba Girvarir Hare. Gopi Jana Balaba Girvarir Hare. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hare.
Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Pavraja Kacharya Sotera Sadashim Sri Manas Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nantakota Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Granga. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sangvijaya Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Dhanamani Namaste Sarasvati Gauravani Gacharnini Vishesha Shimati Daskatari Sajayana. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, Text 11. Kastripnoyat tirtha pado bidanat. Satreshu vasura bir idjamanat. Yakarna nadim punishasya yato. Baba pradam geha ritim shanati. Kastripnuyat tirtha pado vidhanat. Satreshu vasura bir idjamanat. Yakarmav nadim purushasya yato. Bhava pradam geha ritim shanati. Other chant.
Thank you.
Ananadin Purushashayato Bhava Pradam Geharatim Shanati Who is that man? Sripnuyat. That can be satisfied. Tirthapada. Whose lotus feet are all the places of pilgrimage. Abhidhanat. From the talks of. Chitresu. In human society. Va. One who is. Surabhi, by great devotees. Idhyamanat, one who is so worshipped. Ya, who? Karnanadim, in the holes of the ears. Purushasya, of a man. Yata, entering. Bhava Pradam, that which awards birth and death. Geharatim, family affection. Chinati, is cut off. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Who in human society can be satisfied without hearing sufficient talk of the Lord, whose lotus feet are the sum total of all places in pilgrimage, and who is worshipped by great sages and devotees? Such topics can cut off one's bondage to family affection simply by entering the holes of one's ears. Purport. Krishna Katha is so powerful that simply by entering into a person's ear, it can at once give deliverance from the bondage of family affection. Family affection is an illusory manifestation of the external energy and is the only impetus for all mundane activities. As long as there is mundane activity and the mind is absorbed in such engagement, one has to undergo the repetition of birth and death in the current material nescience. People are most influenced by the mode of ignorance, and some are influenced by the passionate mode of material nature, and under the spell of these two modes, a living being is actuated by the material conception of life. The mundane qualities do not allow a living entity to understand his real position. The qualities of both ignorance and passion strongly bind one to the illusory body conception of the self. The best amongst the fools who are thus deluded are those who engage in altruistic activities under the spell of the material mode of passion. Bhagavad Gita, which is direct Krishna Katha, gives humanity the elementary lessons that the body is perishable and that the consciousness which is spread throughout the body is imperishable. The conscious being, the imperishable self, is eternally existent and cannot be killed under any circumstances, even after the dissolution of the body. Anyone who understands this perishable body to be the self and who works for the name of sociology, politics, philanthropy, altruism, nationalism, or internationalism under the false plea of the bodily conception of life is certainly a fool and does not know the implications of reality and unreality. Some of them are above the modes of ignorance and passion and are situated in the mode of goodness. But mundane goodness is always contaminated by tinges of ignorance and passion. Mundane goodness can enlighten one that the body and the self are different, and one in goodness is concerned with the self and not the body. But due to being contaminated, those in mundane goodness cannot understand the real nature of the self as a person. Their impersonal conception of the self as distinct from the body keeps them in the mode of goodness within material nature. Unless they are attracted by Krishna Katha, they will never be liberated from the bondage of material existence. Krishna Katha is the only remedy for all people of the world, because it can situate one in pure consciousness of the self and liberate one from material bondage. To preach Krishna Gita all over the world, as recommended by Lord Chaitanya, is the greatest missionary activity, and all sensible men and women of the world may join in this great movement started by Lord Chaitanya. Om Gyanati Brandisha Gyanajana Salakaya Chaksarunitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchaka Patrubisha Kripa Sindhu Devacha Patitano Pavne Gyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Shiva Prabhupada. So, today's verse, a very important verse, has many wonderful points in the purport. It's somewhat of a continuation of last verse yesterday. We heard that Vidura was fully satisfied with knowledge of the cosmos. He had heard about the upper and lower planetary systems, different species of life, etc. And he said, I've heard that now. I'm satiated. He says, and now he wants to hear about Krishna Kanta, glories of Krishna. And those glories of Krishna, first of all, stated here, can cut the bondage to family life. So that's one of the benefits that's first mentioned here. Actually, there's quite a few topics in this verse and purport I'm going to try to cover today. The first is bondage of family affection. The second, devoted householders can become free from this bondage. Then we hear about the effects of the modes of nature, which Srila Prabhupada talked about quite a bit. And how the mode of goodness will not bring one to highest spiritual understanding. Then the idea that the devotees desire to hear the pastimes of Krishna. And then the value, the benefit, and power of Krishna Katha. And finally, Prabhupada ends the purport with the need for the mission of Lord Chaitanya to spread Krishna Katha throughout the world. So if I get through all of that, it'll be somewhat of a miracle. Dive in. Our attachment to material life is often exemplified through family life. Srila Prabhupada says in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 7.14.5, which is a part of the Bhagavatam that discusses ideal family life. Prabhupada says, a wise man concludes that in the human form of life, he should not endeavor for unnecessary necessities, but should live a very simple life, just maintaining body and soul together. Certainly, one requires some means of livelihood, and one should be satisfied with this. Therefore, instead of hankering for more and more money, a sincere devotee of the Lord tries to invent some ways to earn his livelihood, and when he does so, Krishna helps him. Earning one's livelihood, therefore, is not a problem. The real problem is how to get free from the bondage of birth, death, old age, and disease. So it's pretty clear that there's a certain necessity in this material world to be involved with it, to have to take care of things to keep body and soul together, Srila Prabhupada says. But it should be minimized. We should do the minimum to accomplish these things in some way that's not overly difficult. It's interesting, Prabhupada says, is invent some way to earn his livelihood. Now, that doesn't mean that you come up with some scheme, you know, that's crooked or something like that. It means that whatever you need to do, find something that's practical, that makes sense, that you can do, you know, and then spend the majority of your time, your life, hopefully, in the real purpose of life, which is becoming free from birth, death, disease, and old age, and becoming attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and his service. Now, this is always easier said than done, as we say, and it often appears that even within our own scriptures, there's somewhat of a conflict. Sometimes we get kind of mixed messages. On one side, obviously, marriage, family life, is a very natural part of this material world, and it's also part of spiritual practice, because grihastha life is part of spiritual practice and part of the Vedic varnashram system. And we see that in our past history and looking at our acharyas, that we have many, many great householder devotees. I was looking once, and I just to say the 12 Mahajans, who are greatest authorities in Krishna consciousness, 7 out of the 12 are householders. And then we look at Chaitanya Leela, we see that Srivas, Advaita, Jarya Prabhus, even Lord Chaitanya Nityananda, at least at one part of their life, were householders. And more recently, of course, our own Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda Thakur were all in the Grihastha ashram. So we can see that it's quite possible for one not only to be a devotee and be a householder, but even to be a very great devotee from our past experience we see. Now, what's the other side of it? The other side of it are many very, very good warnings or concerns that our scriptures raise. It is a fact that being in household life necessitates greater involvement with material energy. I mean, I think we can all admit that and see that very easily. You know, if you're involved in family life and having to support and work and all these things, you're going to be a little bit more involved in the interactions of the modes of nature and material life. That's just the way it is. And the concern is that one may become overly concerned in economic development or trying to raise money. And that's what Prabhupada is warning against in this purport, you know, to keep your life as simple as possible. And you also may become somewhat involved in activities of sense gratification, which should be minimized. And all of that put together, what is the real harm? That it may diminish our spiritual practice and our sadhana. So it's not so much that all these things are bad, evil, etc. The real issue is simply that it may take us away from our emphasis on Krishna and Krishna service and our sadhana, our hearing and chanting, which is what we want to emphasize as devotees. And Prabhupada said in a couple of places that Grihastha life is not unrestricted license for sense gratification. There are some there compared to the brahmacharya, the sannyasi, but it is restricted. Prabhupada explains this in a purport, Bhagavad Gita 4:26. Says, similarly, the householders who have some license for sense gratification perform such acts with great restraint. Sex life, intoxication, meat eating are general tendencies of human society, but a regulated householder does not indulge in unrestricted sex life and other sense gratification. And he says, Grihastha must not be overly attached and not become what is called a grihamedi, or a householder who is simply engaged in family life, sense gratification, and is not so concerned with his spiritual life or her spiritual life. So we first have to see ourselves as Vaishnavas, not as householders, not as sannyasis, not in any varna ashram, but our primary activity is bhakti, is serving Krishna. So grihastha life also gives an opportunity for full spiritual advancement. There's no restriction on one's spiritual advancement in any order of life or in any ashram, or I'm sorry, of any varna or any particular work that one does. Science of Self-Realization, Chapter 1, Srila Prabhupada explains this. He says, the grihamedi should be regarded as a blind man driven ahead by uncontrolled senses about to fall into a ditch. Of course, that analogy is found in the seventh canto, right, given by Prahlad Maharaj. Then he says, the opposite of the grihamedi, however, is the grihastha. The grihastha ashram, or the shelter of spiritual family life, is as good as the life of a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order. So there's always a balance. And to go forward and to make sense out of Krishna consciousness and to actually engage our lives properly without anxiety requires a certain amount of intelligence and balance, that we see there's this side and there's the other. Yes, Krishna consciousness, family life is a lot, not only allowed, but it can be a very, very good position, a good platform for executing Krishna consciousness, but there are also things to be aware of. There are concerns not to become overly attached to the material energy. An interesting example, I just read this the other night, I was reading Majjalila, and this is an example, it's kind of an unusual one, from Majjalila 4.1.1.1. This is the story of Madhavendrapuri, and since it's not the central point, I'm not going to go into a long story of Madhavendrapuri. Basically, he's on his way from Vrindavan, from Govardhan, to Jagannath Puri on the request of his deity Gopal to bring him sandalwood paste from Jagannath Puri. So he stops a couple places on the way, famously Rimuna, where he has the the pastime with Shirachura Gopinath. But before that, in the Mayapur area, he visits Advaitacharya, I think at Shantipur, at his home or whatever. And Advaitacharya, being so impressed with the great spiritual you know, the spiritual advancement, the power of Madhavendrapuri, his purity, has to become initiated. We all know Vaitacharya was a disciple of Madhavendrapuri, and so he gives him initiation. Now, I wouldn't have thought of this. Well, okay, that sounds fine. You know, very advanced devotee, very advanced sannyasi is giving initiation, like we see sannyasis give initiation today. But that was not the custom. In those days, who gave initiation primarily? Anybody know? Who were supposed to be the gurus? What order of life? Grihasthas, then Brahmins, of course. Grihastha Brahmins. Those were the gurus. Sannyasis didn't do that because they didn't have, they couldn't stay around and teach you deity worship and all the different types of things. And, you know, the grihasthas often had an ashram in their home. Even they would have little gurukul in their home, you know. In other words, somehow or another, it was considered to be the proper position. But that made no difference to Dvaitacharya or to Madhavendrapuri. And in that, in the purport to that, Srila Prabhupada notes, and he quotes Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, actually, that the Vaishnavas are not concerned with barn and ashram. That is not the way that we judge or consider whether one is advanced, not advanced, qualified, unqualified. And he quotes, of course, the famous verse, Kiba Vipra Kiba Nyasi Shudra Kenanai Ye Krishna Tattva Veta Se Guru Hai, from Majjha 8:128. A person may be a Brahmin, a sannyasi, a shudra, Shudra, or whatever. But if he is well conversant in the science of Krishna, he can become a guru. So that was the standard. And by the way, that that verse in chapter 8 of Majjha Lila was actually spoken by Lord Chaitanya to Ramananda Roy. And Ramananda Roy, and because Lord Chaitanya was asking Ramananda Roy to preach to him, basically to explain, in fact, not just from the beginning, but all the way to the highest stages. You know, he ends up with, all the way to Krishna's relationship with Radharani and, you know, Mahabhava and all of that. And Lord Chaitanya, of course, being, this is his personification of that, but he's asking Ramananda Roy to teach it to him. And Ramananda Roy is saying, wait a minute, no, don't pretend like I'm acting like a puppet. And then that's when, and the fact is that Ramananda Roy was an administrator, he was a householder, he worked for the king, he would be called a materialist. He was in a materialistic position, let's say. But he was a great, great devotee. And he was qualified to even instruct Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's when Lord Chaitanya spoke this verse. Whatever you are, if you're conversant in the science of Krishna, you are qualified. Of course, we know Ramananda Roy and Vrindavan Leela was actually Vishakha. And Vishakha is actually considered to be the guru for the other gopis. She teaches so many of the arts and things that, you know, there. So we can't tell, we can't judge who or what a person is by any exterior bodily concern like that, you know. They could be the greatest devotee, you know, one of the greatest devotees ever. And so, that was one of the first lessons here that we've been hearing from this purport. The other thing about material life and family life means that we become entangled by the modes of nature. And Prabhupada spent some time in this purport talking about the modes of nature. And he's explaining how passion and ignorance, Rajas and Tamas, are the most binding and most deluding. Prabhupada said in the purport today, the mundane qualities do not allow the living entity to understand his real position. The qualities of both ignorance and passion strongly bind one to the illusory bodily conception of life. So that's the concern. When the modes of passion and the modes of ignorance become predominant, then one becomes covered by them, forgets his real position in life, forgets his identity as the pure Atma, the pure spirit soul, identifies with matter, identifies with the material body, and basically becomes completely entangled in this material world. So then he says, somewhat better than that is the mode of goodness. Those in the mode of goodness, they may perform welfare work, they're interested in philosophy perhaps, or intellectual pursuits. But the problem is that one, even in the mode of goodness, becomes conditioned. And Srila Prabhupada in his purport to 14.6 says, Bhagavad Gita, the difficulty here is that when a living entity is situated in the mode of goodness, he becomes conditioned to feel that he has advanced in knowledge and better than others. So in other words, first of all, you become conditioned to a state of happiness because the different modes have different results. And the modes of ignorance basically result in misery. The modes of passion is kind of a mixed base of some happiness, some distress. And the mode of goodness is, by and large, characterized by more happiness. You know, one is more happy because one is acting better, more piously, and gets some result from that. But one becomes conditioned in that sense of happiness, becomes attracted to that happiness, and they're satisfied with that. In other words, rather than realizing all the miseries of the material world, and saying, I need to get out of here, they can just become, you know, thinking it's all right, and they're doing their part, trying to make things better, live in a good world, you know, and, you know, but it can become a trap like that. So one is conditioned to that sense of happiness. By the way, when we talk about, of course, Satyaguna, this is the material mode of guna, of material nature. And it's different from what we know as the Shuddhasattva, the mode of pure goodness. So, of course, in pure goodness, one is really transcendentally situated. So that, but here we're not talking about Shuddhasattva, we're talking about basic sattva in the material world. And Prabhupada, continuing that purport, says, as long as they have attraction for working in that way in the mode of goodness, they have to take some type of body in the mode of nature. So that's the other thing. You lead a good life, but you have to come, you know, and you, perhaps you even develop so much pious credit. But then you have to come back into the material world again for another birth to enjoy the happiness that came from those good works in the mode of goodness. So it's really part of the same trap, same part of the same cycle. And it doesn't really help that much, except that often the mode of goodness is a good platform for understanding higher spiritual life. And when the mode of goodness might be more amenable, might be a better prospect for Krishna consciousness and life. Now, Prabhupada also says at best, they may understand that they're not the body, which is certainly something. That's actually some advancement. But it may be tinged with impersonalism unless they are in Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada says in this purport, those in mundane goodness cannot understand the real nature of the self as a person. Now that's very important. So they may have an impersonal understanding, they may have something exhaling or something spiritual there. And often when you meet these people, often, and you know, they may be vegetarian even, or they do a little yoga, and they're, you know, they are somewhat in the mode of goodness. But do they understand, if you talk about their relationship with God, and God as a person, serving God like that, that's not quite computing to them. They don't quite understand that often. You know, so that's what's missing. And why is it missing? Because they have not heard about Krishna from the lips of a pure devotee. They have not become purified to the point where they can understand this higher spiritual truth of Krishna as Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they have to hear about Krishna to understand God as a person. That not only is God a person, but they are a person, and they have a personal relationship with the Supreme Person. So this is why Krishna Katha is so important within this world. Now, we're also hearing, and we're hearing this in this particular pastime, or this part of this pastime with Vidura and Maitreya, how the devotees desire to hear Krishna's pastimes. Vidura is very eager to hear. He said that, of course, in yesterday's, and he's continuing this, that, okay, all of this about the cosmos and the planetary system, this is okay, but he wants to hear about Krishna's leelas, Krishna's pastimes. And those do tend to be the most interesting to devotees. It is a fact. In Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.46, Lord Brahma says to Narada, O Narada, now I shall state the transcendental incarnations of the Lord known as Leela Avatars. Hearing of their activities counteracts all foul matters accumulated in the ear. These pastimes are pleasing to hear and are relished. Therefore, they are in my heart. So Lord Brahma is saying to Narada, Now I've talked about all these other things. Now I'm going to talk about directly about Krishna and his incarnations, his lila, his pastimes. He says these things are very pleasing to hear and relished. Prabhupada says in that purport, the devotees of the Lord, however, know well how the creative forces work concurrently by the action, reaction, the material energy of the Lord. Therefore, they take more interest in the transcendental activities of the Lord as he incarnates himself on the surface of the material world. So those tend to be very interesting to the devotee. And this is also confirmed a couple different places I can think of from our Acharyas. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Kaur talks about this. And also Ajiva Goswami, and actually this is from the Bhakti Sandarbha, verse 254, his comment on the same verse, 2646. He says there are two types of pastimes. We're talking about Krishna's pastime. He said there are those describing actions like creation of the universe and those describing the activities of the Lila avatars. So Jiva Goswami, when he continues on, he says two types of pastimes of creation and the pastimes of Lila. And then he says the second type, Lila, is superior. So it's natural that devotees like Vidura wish to primarily hear Krishna Lila. And we, as devotees, we know we often feel more attachment to Lila than description of the universe. But we do philosophically understand the need for it all. We know we have to know everything. You know, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, all knowledge, both nominal and phenomenal, knowledge of nescience as well as transcendence, both need to be there. The devotee has to know how things are going on, how things are working. And we also understand that everything is connected to Krishna. So if we're talking about the nature of the material world, we're not talking about something different from Krishna. We're talking about an aspect of Krishna. And sometimes we're hearing about Jnana Yoga, we may be hearing about that aspect of Krishna, perhaps more of the Brahman. We may be hearing more about Paramatma. But when we're hearing Krishna's more direct lilas, then we are talking about Krishna Bhagavan, the Supreme Person of Godhead. And because of our nature as persons, we're attracted to that very naturally. Now, Krishna Katha is the basis that's being discussed here. Now, of course, yesterday was mentioned there are two types of Krishna Katha, the words of Krishna and words about Krishna. And the examples, of course, are given of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna speaks, and Srimad Bhagavatam, which is mostly, has some direct quotes from Krishna, but it's mostly other his devotees speaking about and glorifying and explaining Krishna. Now, both of these are equal. Sometimes talk about the different aspects. Some transcendentalists make a distinction, between Shruti, which is Krishna's direct words, and words that are spoken about him. But we don't so much. It's whether these are Vaishnava literatures or not. If things are spoken by a pure devotee of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, and of course many other sub-conversations, that go on in all these great devotees. So what is the result of hearing Krishna Katha from pure devotees? Well, Bhagavatam tells us right in the second chapter. It says, Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, in everyone's heart and a benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. 1.2.17. So through hearing, we were able to develop this taste for Krishna Katha, for the messages of Krishna. But it needs to be heard from the pure devotee that's mentioned here. Jiva Goswami, again, Bhakti Sandarbha, Anucheta 11, he quotes the next verse before, 1.2.16, O twice-born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such a service, one gains affinity for hearing the message of Vasudeva. And then Jiva Goswami's commentary on that, he says, generally, taste develops by association with great devotees. By serving great devotees, taste for the Lord's topics develops. In meeting those devotees, one develops faith in worshiping the Lord, then desire to hear. And from hearing, face develops. Hearing from great devotees has immediate effect. So, we all know that, you know, of course, Shravanam, hearing, is the basis. That's the first process of devotional service, of bhakti yoga. Hearing, chanting, and then, of course, remembering. And from that, everything comes about. Maharaj Prakrit also glorified this process right in the beginning of the 10th canto. Is it, 10.1.3, third verse of the 10th canto. Maharaj Prakrit said, simply by chanting or repeating Krishna Katha, one is liberated from the contamination of Kali Yuga. Anyone who becomes even slightly interested in Krishna Katha is liberated. So he's very desirous to hear all of Krishna's pastimes from the beginning to end. And all of Krishna's pastimes are absolute. We know everything in relationship to Krishna, his holy name, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam, his dham, his pastimes are all absolute. So if we're hearing about the killing of demons, or if we're hearing about the rasa dance, it's all absolute in relationship to Krishna. It's all purifying to us. Srila Kirti was telling me once that he was reading to Srila Prabhupada at night, and when he would read some stories of killing the demons in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada seemed to really enjoy them, and he would kind of laugh and chuckle. You know, you can tell him Srila Prabhupada was pleased. And so the next time night he went to read to him again, he went through looking for and picking out a nice demon-killing story. And Prabhupada said, don't worry about it. He says, you don't need to even choose. Just pick it up anywhere. He said, it's all equal. He said, it's like if you taste a piece of rock candy or sugar candy anywhere, it's all going to taste the same. It's all equally sweet. So Prabhupada gave us that lesson. Yes, you may have certain things that you want. You know, you may have your personal preferences, but in terms of its absolute nature and its spiritual effect and its purifying effect, it's all equal. So Vidura was particularly relishing hearing from Maitreya, and we know that of all the literatures, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is most relishable. Verse from 1340 says, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God, and it's compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God. It is meant for the ultimate good of all people and is all successful, all blissful, and all perfect. This was a very important, a spam message from someone who's trying to sell me something. I wish people would turn their cell phones off during class. Yeah, can you? And you can don't buy anything for them, though. Let me try. I don't know how to turn this off. Okay. Technology impaired. So hearing these pastimes is the same, for us, is the same as when Vidura is hearing from Maitreya. And it can become very pleasing. And devotees never tire of hearing. Pastimes are ever fresh, ever new to us. So we've all experienced this. We haven't picked up a book, certain volume for a while. We read a pastime, we've not heard for some years, and it seems fresh and new, almost like we never read that. Have you ever had that experience? I don't remember that was there. You may have read it a couple times before. And why is that? Because it is fresh, it's new by its nature, and we are also always spiritually evolving, having greater realization, great understanding, so we may actually be able to understand and interpret that same verse or that same purport of Srila Prabhupada in a deeper way and becomes more meaningful to us as we grow in our Krishna consciousness. And so we see that many devotees read Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam over and over again and never tire. This was as of a few years ago, so I'm sure it's much more now, but I remember Prahladananda Maharaj says, read the Bhagavad Gita, you know, from front to back, all the way through, about 350 times, you know, which is pretty amazing. That must be a record. But at any rate, obviously, he always keeps relishing it, never tires. So there's a difference between, obviously, spiritual sound and material sound. Spiritual sound enlivens the soul, where material sound has a very different effect. It's actually called a satiation effect. And the definition of satiation effect is, semantic satiation is a psychological phenomena which repetition causes a word or phrase to temporarily lose meaning for the listener, who then perceives the speech as repeating meaningless sounds. So material sound vibration not only just gets boring to the listener, but it actually loses any meaning. Say, in other words, you repeat a certain word over and over again, and after a while, your mind actually stops even comprehending what the word means. You can try this. Take some mundane word and you can chant it for a while, and you'll see the effect you get is just meaningless, which is quite different than the fact that we chant the Hare Krishna mantra with the same words over and over again. How many times a year do we chant? A million, probably millions, you know, chanting names of Krishna. But yet, the more we chant, the more enlivening it becomes. So we have the opposite effect between the material and the spiritual. Srila Prabhupada says, purport to 10.1.13, even though advanced devotees hear continually about the Lord for years, they still feel these topics are coming to them as newer and fresher. Therefore, such devotees cannot give up hearing the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So, Prabhupada says that this message of hearing the pastimes of Krishna is so important that this is Lord Chaitanya's mission, that we need to try to give this message to everyone in the world. And there's a very important verse from, it's the story of Kurma Brahman. Yara deki tara kahe Krishna Upadesh Amara Gyana Guru Hanatara Edesh. Instruct everyone to follow the orders of Lord Sri Krishna as they are given to the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and try to liberate everyone in this land. I was going to read the pastime, but I don't have time now, I don't think. But the basic purport kind of ties a lot of what we talk about today together. The idea that a devotee, whatever stage of life they're in, whether they're Brahmin, whether they're Shudra, whether they're householder, it does not matter if they know the science of Krishna consciousness. Because, of course, Kurma Brahman was he was a Brahmin, and Lord Chaitanya visited him in South India, and when he was leaving to go to his next stop, Kurma was so attached to him, he said, please, let me leave home and let me come with you. And Lord Chaitanya basically said, well, here's what he said. He said, don't speak like that again. Better to remain at home and chant the holy name of Krishna always. Instruct everyone to follow the orders of Lord Krishna as given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and liberate everyone in the land. So, Lord Chaitanya's instructions are for everyone. And Srila Prabhupada's made this very clear. In fact, even when Srila Prabhupada says everyone in India, everyone in Bharatvarsha, should give this movement to everyone, Prabhupada says, that doesn't mean just Indians, the Americans, everyone. Anyone who is a devotee, anyone who has come to this Krishna consciousness stage, we have a responsibility. We have a responsibility to take these wonderful pastimes of Krishna, this Leela, this Krishna Gita, this science of Krishna consciousness, this philosophy, which has this great effect upon humankind. It has this effect of actually liberating people, of clearing all of the contamination of the modes of nature that are within the heart, and actually make one joyful and happy. By connecting with Krishna through the Guru, and developing that relationship, and actually perceiving that relationship. Even at our beginning stage, we can perceive the growth, the beginning of our relationship with Krishna, and how it keeps continuing to grow as we continue to hear and chant over many, many years. So, Prabhupada said, I think this is purport in there, he says, we simply request everyone to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. If one is a little literate, you can read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. These works are now available in the English language and done very authoritatively to spread to all classes of men. People throughout the world should take advantage of this movement, chant the Hare Krishna Maha mantra at home with their families. So Srila Prabhupada's mission was to translate, distribute these books, to spread the glories of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna. So following the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya, we should also try to distribute these literatures, tell others of Krishna, tell one another about Krishna. Preach to ourselves. That's always a good thing to do. And preach to the devotees. And I don't mean preach to devotees like, Sometimes we don't even like to use that word. They like to think about outreach or anything. I'm just old-fashioned. I always just say preach, which is what we are doing. But in a sense, you know, but there's sometimes there's connotations about different words, the way they're used. Preaching really means to enliven one another, to connect with other devotees, to be able to enliven one another, to help one another, to serve one another. Preaching really means service. There must be a way to stop this thing. There we go. Finally found it off. Okay, I'm sorry. Forgive me. So, I think I'm done. Hare Krishna. Wonderful verse and purport. Any questions, comments?
Covered a lot of ground.
There's
one thing in there. The best of the
go ahead. Go ahead. Use the microphone if you can.
The best of the four. So you can issue repeat. I thought that was really cute.
Which one?
The best among the fools.
Best among the fools. Yeah. Those in the mode of goodness were the best among the fools. Better than, less foolish than being in the mode of ignorance. Yeah. Prabhupada has some wonderful ways with words, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Guru Prasad?
Yeah, he's right. He covered lots of topics. You know, they always said the preacher has to want to preach and the listener has to want to listen. But when the devotees go out and preach, we're talking about preaching, approaching people who don't even want to hear. And so sometimes these people become very violent and stuff. But later on, we've seen some of those very people become devotees. So is it, they must hear something and then later on, you know, become devotees. So it gives the preachers hope that, you know, everybody's qualified, you know, so you don't have to really want to hear, but devotees are making their good fortune.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Well, yeah. Actually, yeah, I was going to quote it, but I just ran out of, you know, time. But there was one verse that I was reading yesterday when I was preparing this that says that when the Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken, three types of people are benefited. One, the speaker. Two, the listener. And three, anyone else who hears. You know, so the benefit is there. Sometimes it's conscious, sometimes it's not conscious. Sometimes it takes some time to fructify. It takes some time for that benefit, the spiritual benefit people are getting to manifest. And we've all probably had experiences or heard of or had personal experiences of people who were, I mean, I know, oh, this was gosh, back in the 70s sometime, you know, we were staying at, my wife and I were traveling, and we went to the Denver Temple for the Sunday feast, and then we didn't really have a place to stay particularly, and some woman says, who was a congregational member, says, you know, I'm leaving tonight, I'm going off on a trip, you know, here's where my keys to my apartment are, you can stay there tonight. I said, okay, great. And so we made that arrangement, and then we get a knock on the door tonight, and then her sister, who didn't know that she'd left yet, shows up, who didn't really know. She knew her sister was interested in Krishna consciousness, but didn't know much about it, and so we talked to her that night for a couple of hours, you know, a real nice talk, and then a few years later, I'm president of Bhaktivedanta Village, the school in Three Rivers, California, and we have a couple that's coming to move there, you know, some devotees from Denver, and it's her. You know, I didn't even know that. I never thought about it having much effect on her. I thought, maybe she's a little interested, but didn't seem, you know, like she was ready to become a devotee. And she said that. She said that that made the difference in her pursuit of Krishna consciousness. And, you know, I'm sure you've made hundreds more devotees than I'll ever think of. But, you know these things, and because sometimes you don't know. You distribute so many books, and you don't know what all the effects of those are, right?
Well, speaking, you know, one of my sisters is married to a Muslim man, and we've been there three or four times, weddings and births mm-hmm. and stuff. So my husband is always preaching to my brother-in-law, mm-hmm. and he's always defending and he's very passionate. But he has two kids, a boy and a girl. And over the years, they have listened, they've been asked, and now they're older. And we went there recently for a wedding, and the boy was asking so many questions. You could tell over the years he had heard, and he was asking about it, you know, so many intricate things. And I said, where did you hear all this? He said, oh, I used to listen when, you know, my husband was preaching. So, but over the years, he wouldn't ask, they never asked any questions.
Yeah.
But suddenly, it was just like this whole eruption is coming out of it. So, you know, and he's trying to decide, you know, comparing, you know, the Islamic book to the Bhagavad Gita. And I said, you've been reading? He said, yes, he's a doctor, so I guess he's a little more intelligent. But I was so amazed. He was asking questions I couldn't even answer because you could tell he was really studying the books. But he never said anything. Every time we go, they'll sit quietly, respect, you know, their own question, I mean, challenge. But obviously they've heard. I mean, this is like 20 years or more down the line. So you never know who's hearing.
You know, when we experience or hear something that's material, we may or may not retain it. Of course, some, you know, neuropsychologists say that everything is retained somewhere in your brain, but we can't retrieve it or we can't access information. But then sometimes it actually is just gone. Anyway, you never think about it again, something that happened 50 years ago or whatever. But when we hear spiritual sound vibration, that may not even be retained by the conscious, the external, this is the external, but you know what I mean, by material mind, the material mind of intelligence. But the soul has perceived it, right? I mean, the Atma has heard that and started to become a little awakened. He has become aroused. And so that the person, the Atma, they hear enough of these things, and it kind of, they pull that all in, and somehow it finally comes to a point where it sort of boils up to the surface, you know. Now, I don't think I just made that up. I think that's true. And does that make sense? You know, because we do know that Vishnu Chakravarti says that when it comes to Krishna consciousness, you know, first there has to be faith, shraddha, this beginning. But how does someone have faith? Where does it come from? And where does Vishnu say that faith comes from? The jnana sukriti. Unknown benefit or unknown purification. In other words, a person has met a devotee, whatever, taken some prasada, maybe even inadvertently, seen the Rathyatra cart, heard the holy name, and that accumulation, even of a jnana sukriti, what to speak of, if it was conscious, would be even better, comes to a point where one has sufficient faith to begin hearing from devotees, associating with devotees, and begins to change. Becomes a devotee. So it's a very, very wonderful process, and as you're indicating, it can happen even unknowingly in so many ways. And that's the power of Krishna consciousness. That's the power of Krishna Katha. It's the power of association with great devotees. You know? Anything connected with Krishna.
It's a wonderful process.
Well, yes. Thank you for sharing that. Anything else? Still? So, Soma, we're here. Oh. Yeah. Then we'll get that.
Just the point where you were talking about preaching to the devotees. It's a verse in the 18th chapter where Krishna says, you know, I forget the exact
61, word, isn't it?
One who explains his signs to the devotees. That's how he words it, or he preaches it to the devotees.
That's a great verse. I was looking it up a few days ago, and it's, I think it's 61. It's a great verse, and I think it's very inspirational for all of us. And it's just like this paper all sticks together. All right, if I can get these pages apart. Must be another page. There we go. This is, this is also having peripheral neuropathy, another fun benefit of old age. Oh, come on, it's right between these. This is very annoying. I can't, these are so thin. Here we go. Excuse me. Okay. No, it wasn't 61. 60 must be 65. Yeah, it's, Manmano above the Mudbhakto comes after it, doesn't it? Yeah. Oh, now because you make your friend, I explain to you this liberation liberator fully. Is it 68? Okay, we're close. One who explains the supreme secret to my devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed, and at the end, he'll come back to me. So in other words, one who explains the secret to my devotees, one who is talking to his devotees, preaching to, helping the devotees, he's saying not only you're very dear, but you're going to go back to Godhead, come back to Krishna. Thank you. Took a while to find it, but it was worth it. It's a great verse. Yeah, I think we forget about that, or we don't forget about it, but we all experience it. But it doesn't just mean that we have to go find someone on the street who doesn't know anything and somehow try to convince them. We have thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of devotees throughout the world, and we all need to help each other. We all need to encourage and to enthuse each other and try to all move forward in our understanding of Krishna consciousness. Okay. What's that? No?
It doesn't say we're going back to Godhead in this lifetime, though, if we preach instead of eventually go back. Is that the same?
I'll say it again.
The text you just read said that the preachers will go back to Godhead, but it didn't say in this lifetime. It said.
No, it didn't. Without doubt. Well, that's pretty good. That's almost a guarantee, saying without doubt. I mean, like, all these things are qualitative. You know, it's not like, well, I could preach to somebody one time and be a nonsense rascal the rest of my life or something. No, I mean, you know, he's sensitive.
I guess if you're a preacher, it doesn't matter where you are, you know, without doubt. Is that what he said?
Well, you could still be, when he says come back to me, usually we think that means going back to Godhead, but yeah. It could mean just being completely with Krishna, you know. Together with Krishna, that you are one with Krishna, that sense of having that purpose. Okay. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.